continue our discussions of the comprehensive for whatever number of meetings it takes to move through it. Mincy, thank you very much. I think at the last meeting we said, or at least we agreed, that we really need to come together and understand the core principles of the document. We're getting lost in the weeds, I think, and we're not making as much progress as we would like. So thank you very much for putting together this document. It's about a 10-page document. For anyone following along, it's in the Committee of the Whole packet today. It's about 10 pages with maps and so forth. And we were asked to respond, if we would, through Mr. Reimer with any comments. And several of us did, and those were in turn distributed to the entire council, so we can work through those. So, and I think what we wanted to do is see if we could come to some agreement on these core principles before we dive into the document itself and go from there. Mitzi or Mr. Reimer, anyone else have any preliminary comments before we get into that?
Nope.
In the document that I sent out, one of the comments I made is that this almost strikes me as more of the core comprehensive plan as I envisioned it. Comprehensive plan being relatively concise, very high level, with some direct statements, and then certainly with a lot of the details to follow in the actual land development ordinances. But so I found that a little amusing as I read through it, that this is kind of what I had in mind, but we'll see what others think. So we could take, what I'd like to do is maybe work through this document. It's only 10 pages, a page at a time, and see if there's any particular thing, items that jumped out at people. And unless someone has a different idea of how they'd like to proceed. Okay? So as I look at Mitzi's document, page one, and again, I captured a lot of this in my written comments, and I had some observations on the section entitled Community Vision. And my comments were that I understand the language of the first three bullets. Rochester is a city that cares, welcoming and diverse, safe and friendly. And again, these are my opinions. I didn't view those as something that I wanted to see in the comprehensive plan. Conversely, the last three bullets I thought were very apropos for what we have in terms of our responsibilities, air, water quality, land use, well-planned streets, sidewalks, trails, sustainability, responsible for public resources, quality public services, etc. So I'll stop there and see if there's any particular reaction, but that was mine as I read through that section. Mr. Campy.
I guess generally speaking, I can come along on the idea that perhaps the comprehensive plan was a bit long. I think we had a lot to cover, so I don't think I surprise anyone with that comment. But I will say, like, we're going to cover the same material kind of regardless. Either we're going to cover it as part of the comp plan, or we're going to make probably add some other guiding document that has to complement the zoning and stuff like that. So I see some of this stuff, and we can start really chiseling away all of the aspirational components of this, if that's really the intent of the council. A few pieces like that to kind of say what we see as our operating position as a community, to me, don't really detract from the overall value of the document. I think they do a pretty good job. So when I first read them, I said, yeah, those are kind of the things we've committed to, I think, in all of our decision making. So it didn't necessarily strike me the same way as detracting from the work that can be done with the document. I guess that would be my feedback on that.
And I, real quickly, I think part of the reason for a lot of my comments is I keep going back to the enabling legislation, and it appears to be, you know, quite a bit more legislative in intent, a municipality's responsibilities in terms of good land use, preserving tax base, etc. So that's perhaps where I get hung up a little bit, as I look at the enabling legislation, and I structured my comments in many respects along those lines and kind of set aside some of the more aspirational items, Mr. Wojcik.
Well, and whatever it takes to get this thing done, I'm always willing to negotiate. I'm comfortable with the language being in there, and in particular as a charter city, the you know, policies that relate to the general welfare of the people that we represent are certainly part of our roles. In particular, the enabling legislation, how people have responded to it is backed by where comprehensive plans are statewide. In particular, cities both larger and smaller than us often have aspirational statements as part of their comprehensive plan. So what I would say is that if having this language in there is a non-starter for you, we can have that discussion. But in my particular case, I don't... In the worst case scenario, that if it, I don't see this as having any harm to language being in there, and it is reflective of you know what I would aspire to as a city.
And I guess the way I look at it is, I think when we're looking at a comprehensive plan, we're looking at the overall. Having a stated goal of what we'd like, it doesn't say what you have to do, but it just says these are things we're striving for. We're trying to strive to make sure that we have a community that's welcoming, that's diverse and inclusionary in what we're shooting for. I don't think those hurt. That doesn't say what you have to do or not do to get there. It just says these are things that we need to remember, that we're working for a great place for our citizens to live and people who come here to visit. And so I'm willing to work with it to get this through, because I don't see the harm in those kind of comments. I think they're important for us to have, because that's what we're here for. That was what got us into office, was to make sure that we take care of the people. And that's, you know.
And let me clarify, I didn't want to imply that the statements were in error or harmful or anything like that.
No, I'm just saying that
I just thought they perhaps belonged in more of an appendix as opposed to part of the core plan. But anyway.
And I'm willing to work with that if that's the feeling of the council, and that's what it takes to get this through.
Mr. Wojcik, did you hand up?
Well, and in particular, I was looking for the exact language, but in the 462.351, the language that they use is means of guiding future development of land so as to ensure a safer, more pleasant, and more economical environment for residential, commercial, industrial, and public activities. And a lot of what this... you know, a safer and more pleasant a lot of times relates to some of these aspirational goals. Anyone who's ever played SimCity in their life knows that when people are happy, other things tend to go well.
All right, other comments? Anyone else? So for now, we'll just leave it intact as presented by Ms. Baker. All right. Moving on to that second section of the page, I still have some issue with core principle number 6, champion social equity, environmental justice. And I guess part of this, and again, somewhat like the legislative text, part of this goes to some philosophical underpinnings of role of government. And I'm not a strong proponent of strong government involvement. So as when we start talking about government and specifically the city and city council and how that would truly try to influence or make changes in terms of social equity, I don't know. Is that within our bailiwick? And part of the reason I say that is certainly because of Olmsted County. They are far more involved in social services, social programs, some of those things. There's some overlap, but that was the rationale that I had for kind of questioning that principle. Mr. Hickey.
Yeah, I'll make some of the same comments I made before on number 6. So I don't believe this is a planning principle. I think it's reworded so that it is more clear. It's a value statement. I mean, this is something we do in every aspect of the city, so it's not a planning principle. So, again, I think the wording is unclear. I think there's code words. I mean, they said environment doesn't really mean the environment. Champion social equity. So if we want to say in Rochester we're going to treat all people equitably with dignity and respect, we should just say that and put it in front of the document, and then that informs everything else we do. But project by project or, you know, at a planning level, you know, I don't think it's a planning principle, it's a value statement. That's my position on that hasn't changed.
And perhaps what I'm doing too is I'm looking at that principle six in context of the other principles that you mentioned. Clearly we are going to get involved in land use and transportation and fiscal sustainability and so forth, and I didn't put principle number six kind of on the same par as those other things that are more tangible or things that we would be more engaged in. Ms. Johnson?
No.
Oh, sorry.
No, yes. I'm just having a technical issue. I'm good.
All right, then Mr. Wilkins.
Well, I've read through everybody's comments. I have to say this one would be probably the one where I'd be more willing to draw a little bit of a line in the sand that if we want to massage the language to make people feel comfortable, I think that's fine. But Mr. Hickey, Mr. Staver, you sat with me at the Martin Luther King Day breakfast this year, and one of the things that was particularly important to those folks that we represent there was the issue of equity and justice. These are issues that kept coming up and up again, and you're absolutely right that it's harder to conceptually see how you apply those until you start to look at which kids can safely walk to a park and which kids cannot, which families can safely access healthy foods and which ones cannot. Again, this is something that's consistent with where plans have gone in the 10 years that I've been involved in government. It's a very common principle behind how communities do their planning right now. It has to do with who's able to vote in a walkable distance from where they live and who has to cross a busy highway. There are these things weigh in to a lot of the factors that we can do, and I think if you don't feel it directly implies what we do, I don't think there's harm in having it in there, and I do think that it specifically guides issues of fairness within the community and helps direct resources to communities that need more resources. Now, I'm particularly a fan of the word equity because equity is not equality. Equality would mean the same resources go to everybody in equal proportions, and equity is different communities get the resources that they need. So I do think that having this in there as a core principle is something that maybe some of us around the table don't see why that's so important, but I think if we invited a lot of our constituent groups in, including the NAACP and others, they would talk to you about why social equity and environmental justice are cornerstone elements to a community. So whereas probably 90% of the stuff I read, I can work with that. I would say that having this as a core principle is something that I think should remain in there. If we want to massage the language, certainly happy to do that, but I would just hate to be a community that pulled that out as a core principle.
All right, other questions, Mr. Campion?
I would say that when I look at some of what these core principles do, they kind of also enable council members to bring up contextually concerns they may have about the way we're delivering services. So again, this gets back to the desire. If our desire is to deliver high-quality services, I think simply using the metrics we've always used to evaluate this is going to be probably leading us to the same, delivering the same way we always have. And I think one aspect of this plan is asking us to look forward on how can we evaluate the service delivery success along a broader set of criteria. And one of those, I think, is this equity principle of, one embodiment of this that comes up is just we talk about accessibility of buildings to people with various types of disability. There's equity takes a number of dimensions that I think I've heard almost everyone on this council raise at one point or another is, is that a proper location for XYZ? Will it be servicing that community and those users the way it needs to be? I see this as, something we should seriously consider keeping. I think it broadens our ability to kind of evaluate things that come forward, projects that come forward, and developments that come forward kind of in holistic kind of understanding of our community.
Mr. Bilderbach.
From what I'm hearing, my whole question for everybody is, are we concerned, what's this mean? Is that where the question really lies? That people aren't comfortable with the definition, the wording? And is it something where we need to hash out a way to phrase it, or have a discussion on what it actually means, or maybe have Mitzi jump in here and talk about where the input came from to kind of try to make sure everybody's on the same page, because what it sounds like to me is that everybody's looking at this a little differently and the meanings and what it's implying. And so maybe it would help if we heard from Mitzi where this came from and have a conversation of what we think it means.
Well, and I think that's a good point, and Mitzi might want to jump in on this, because one of the things I do as I read a lot of these statements is I jump ahead and I think about implementation. And, okay, what does that mean? How are you going to implement that? And, is that going to create a challenge or some conflict downstream when if someone says, well, we said we were going to champion social equity, so therefore... So perhaps some enlightenment on what you would, where maybe it came from, and then how that might actually be, how that might actually be activated or implemented.
Well, the source of the vision and the core principles are really grounded in your constituents. There's a lot of input from a lot of the public from this community, and very early in the process, there was a. Extended effort to reach out to people who are not normally at our meetings, who don't show up at public hearings, who may not know English as their first language, who may not be familiar with the political process, or may not simply even have access to participate in that political decision process because of whatever commitments they have as individuals or families. And some of these core principles and community vision statements about being inclusive and welcoming and addressing social equity and environmental justice came from the community. They want to see us value those things and to carry forward those interests as you're making public infrastructure investments, as you're making investments in how you deliver your services, you're making decisions about those things. So that's really the source.
I've heard a lot from public health in the last few weeks, and they sound like they had a lot of involvement in writing this. And do you have any idea where they got, where they're coming from, or what they're looking at? And as Mr. Staver asked, I think a good question that would help us here is, how do they expect it to be implemented besides infrastructure? Do they have specifics that they may have offered, or the constituent groups?
Well, and I'd say public health provided input just like a lot of community groups did. Interest groups from all different areas provide input. In terms of how it applies as we move forward as a community, at the end of the day, it's ultimately up to the city council to decide how those policies and decisions get made on a project-by-project basis. It at times will be your decision, or how the ordinances get changed so that something is clear or required or not required, ultimately is your decision. Some examples of how this might play out is if you're making decisions about transit investment, you'll be looking at issues related to social equity. And I think you're already doing that because some of those federal dollars require that you do it. And same with environmental justice. Where are you putting your public infrastructure investments? And are you disproportionately impacting disadvantaged neighborhoods with a negative impact more so than you are mainstream or affluent neighborhoods?
Mr. Campion,
can I ask a follow-up? I want to make sure that I understand. When we went through the Parks Master Plan process, we did a little bit of analysis that went to the level of the cultural predominant cultural experience for certain parks is soccer versus baseball. And where we locate that kind of gets to that equity discussion is my understanding. That was a microcosm of this equity discussion that will take place on transit and other things. So do you just see that this is the embodiment of that principle kind of across our planning processes? That's kind of the...
That is one very good example of that. There is an opportunity to massage the language, as Mr. Wojcik had suggested. It doesn't sound like this as a value is really in dispute. It sounds like as a community value that's represented in who we are, and that maybe should be said.
Mr. Hickey. So again, that's back to my point. It's not a planning principle, it's a value statement. So you put it up front, it informs everything we do as a city, not just the comprehensive plan, it informs everything we do as a city. So I don't see how it becomes a planning principle.
Are you just saying to move it out of core principles in the community vision? Is that kind of your...
Sure.
But then put it up in the value, or in the community vision.
And say what it really means. Don't use code words. I mean, say what you really mean. If you want to treat all people equitably with dignity and respect, then just say that. Or whatever you want to say, say it. I mean, when people read about the environment, they probably think we're talking about the environment. I mean, that's what I would think. So I just think we need to speak plainly. I mean, it shouldn't be a hard thing to do. I mean, I think it's something we can all agree on as far as what we're trying to do. And I think we should just be plain about how we say it.
Okay, so Councilmember Wojcik, you said this is kind of a line in the sand thing. Is this being a community vision versus a core principle is not a line in the sand would be my interpretation of what you said. You want the statement made.
Yeah.
Okay, so we just need new language for this one and put
statement.
It into the vision statement. Because I think generally, I haven't heard anyone object to what happened with the Parks Master Plan when we did exactly what this is kind of standing for. So if you object to that, let's strike it. Otherwise, I think let's move forward. There's a lot more pages.
As I think about it, it remains in the plan as long as it's clear that our language, that we're responding to the community that desires this to be part of the plan, as long as that's communicated. And then in terms of the language, I mean, social equity, environmental justice are commonly used terms out there. If there's other terms that capture that as well, and just to confuse things too, social justice is the other really commonly used one. So as long as we maintain the focus on that, then we can look back at that as a guiding, if not a principle of value, to make that work.
Is there consensus? Is there a majority consensus for us to do that?
You need five.
Just another comment. I was glancing once again at section 3, where we have all the goals and policies, and in no case is this particular item, social equity, mutual exclusive of everything else. In other words, most often, as I look at this list, if we successfully achieve integrated land use and transportation, we will achieve the equity peaks. So that's why I'm kind of puzzled, maybe why we would call it out as its own principle, as opposed to maybe like Mr. Hickey is suggesting, as more of a boilerplate statement up front that guides a lot of our thinking. Maybe it's semantics, I don't know, but.
To be clear, part of that explanation then clearly has to explain how it underlies what's in this plan, not just that it's something that the other points gloss over. That part of when it's brought up in the whatever section it's brought up in, that needs to be clearly communicated as to how those principles affect the creation of this plan.
At a minimum, it's on page 250 of the section 3 that has some additional verbiage that we'll have to probably work into the other principal sections to figure out what makes sense.
So, have we given any consensus or at least something you can work with?
The ultimate consensus when we see the final language, but I'd like to see it go in this direction.
Are you comfortable with letting her try to work it in the community vision?
Yeah.
And that's where I think we're looking at right now.
Because I think you've already begun some edits to do some scrubbing and so forth. Mr. Ruska, then Mr. Reimer.
Missy, could you share with the council a little bit? When I sent my questions, I referred to the presentation that Bill Wheeler did, the PowerPoint presentation that he presented to ROCOG. Can you share a little bit about that, what that was about, and how that got to the table that we all viewed it?
Yes, ROCOG is the Rochester Oversight Council of Governments. It is the governing board for the Regional Transportation Planning Authority, which we happen to staff. As part of that work, there was an environmental justice protocol that was developed and adopted by ROCOG. And environmental justice is not about the natural environment so much as it is about the environment in which people are living, and it does call out the need to be more equitable in your investments and conscious not to disproportionately burden disadvantaged neighborhoods with those investments. So an example would be cutting through a poor neighborhood or a low-income immigrant neighborhood, it could be any number of those things, with a major transportation facility in which the noise, the dust, the traffic is very disrupted. It cuts a neighborhood apart. It makes it difficult for them to be able to connect with their neighbors the way that they used to, because now they suddenly have this gigantic barrier between them. It's a document that requires that you take certain steps to make sure you're engaging the public and people of all different backgrounds and part of the decision process, and being conscious of those things.
And I think that's what kind of cued me a little bit, is it was it fit in the same realm of what that presentation was about. So I find it kind of, I find there to be a tie-in. And are you saying there wasn't a tie-in between that and how this principle was put in there? Was there any tie-in in that?
Well, I think there is a relationship there, but I don't believe that was the source of where it came from.
Okay.
I believe the source is really the community and the community report.
So if we were to have it as a core principle, would we reference back to that report and that study? Because I know that that was a contracted study that we had that was performed and done for ROCOG, correct?
That's correct. I can certainly look back at that document and see if it would be an appropriate reference.
Because I think they have the same names. When I saw this in here, I'm thinking, okay, that ties into that. And so I'm trying to figure out, that's what one of my questions were, was that tied into that or isn't it tied into that?
Okay. I have Mr. Reimer, then Mr. Hickey.
No.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Hickey.
I was just going to say, now, just an example you gave, you talked about we wouldn't want to do something to, I think the example you gave was an immigrant neighborhood. Why are we differentiating? If it's not good for one neighborhood, why would it be good for another? Why are we drawing a distinction? I mean, aren't we going to treat all neighborhoods alike?
Well, I think that's the point of that. Affluent neighborhoods tend to have individuals that are more involved and able to be connected to the public process, decision process, more so than people who are not familiar with this country, not familiar with the language, with the process, the politics, the structure, or individuals who simply have very limited means in which to be more involved in the community. So that's really what that gets to.
Yeah, again, I don't
understand. She's stating the problem, you're stating the solution. I think you guys are in agreement. The problem is historically, things have happened that have not treated all neighborhoods the same. You're saying treat all neighborhoods the same. Minneapolis is one example.
We're not Minneapolis.
Hold on. I think they're just saying, they're pointing out the problem. You've stated something that is the solution. Treat all neighborhoods the same. That is two sides of the exact same coin. I don't think there's a dispute.
If you're saying it's not happening here, it still doesn't make it bad to have it in the plan saying it's not going to happen here, but I would say it has happened here. Take a look at Marion Road.
What about Marion Road?
Marion Road does not have the same access to safe routes for different modes as the rest of the community.
And this came in as township road, or we've applied our city standards differently, or when did this happen?
It happens today. It's that way today.
So streets have been redeveloped. The example given before was they didn't have sidewalks. So we redeveloped the streets. We didn't put in sidewalks because we isolated a neighborhood, or it's a
there
high
is,
sidewalk.
This is a very reasonable principle to have in our plan.
When you look at Marion Road, if you want to go down that road, you turn around and look on the one side of the road, there is no sidewalks or paths for people to get to. And that was developed after the highway had been there. Remember, that's the old Highway 52.
Our sidewalk policies, so since our sidewalk policies were in place, we specifically didn't put sidewalks in.
Sidewalks in.
Right, so it's just a hypothetical.
Same thing connecting our neighborhoods. Right. Both on 18th Avenue.
Yeah.
All I'm saying is we're throwing up hypotheticals where they haven't been a problem.
So help me out here. What is the negative side of having this in our comprehensive plan? Why don't you want it in the comprehensive plan?
So again, when I say treat all people equitably with dignity and respect, I mean that's all people. And then we don't start isolating and saying, what, this group or that group?
Why is the current language bad and that is good?
the Champion Social Equity and Environmental Justice.
Why is that bad?
So I'm saying, I think if you asked a random sample of 20 people, they wouldn't know what that means. You said this is a common planning terminology that you're familiar with. Mm-hmm. I would think most people don't really know what that means. So why not just say what we mean?
And I hadn't until I saw the presentation, and then the presentation cued me to say, okay, that's why that's in there. So does that tie basis to that presentation findings that was presented to us? And I think if so, then the council should see it before we make it one of the core principles.
And I think, too, what we're saying is we've asked Missy to take a stab at this and see if she could find a way, go back and look at what Ed has requested to see if it ties in, to see if it needs to be referenced. I think most of us here have asked her to go back and look to see how she can put this in to the vision and try to write it up. And so it's clear, which would answer some of Mr. Hickey's concerns, is it's not, you know, people don't know what it means, so hopefully has it better defined, and then we can take a look at it again.
I mean,
I'm hoping we can agree to let that, put it in that position, so we can move on. Yeah.
Well, and irrespective of which way it goes, I don't see there's any negative side to having that language in there. If we want to coach it, put it in a different position, I totally get that. But to say that because it's not generally understood, it shouldn't be in the comprehensive plan, transit-oriented development is something that a lot of people would not necessarily know what that was. And if you come back to me and you can give us why this is actually bad language, then I can at least understand where you're coming from.
I think we've heard enough to try to go back and adjust the vision statement, and I think we can bring something back and try and move the conversation on to the next
question. Yeah. Ms. Johnson?
I'm going to follow Missy's lead. Yes, let's go. Next.
All right. All right. Let's move on to page 2. And I really don't have any questions on this page, and mainly because I thought it started to address some of the more tangible elements that I think we as local government should address, whether it's managing growth, especially on the periphery of the city, encouraging revitalization, concentrating uses of a similar nature, etc. So that gets to the meat and potatoes of what I think we deal with as a government. So I didn't have any particular comments on that page. Anyone else?
I just to make sure, because I'm looking at my computer, your page that you're talking to starts with blending old and new strategies for physical growth and change.
Page 2 of Mitzi's document.
Okay.
Anyone else have questions on that? Mr. Rusk?
Well, we've asked for quite a while to kind of revisit the complete streets policy that was it 2009 that we voted that in? I think there was some questions about it, and the feedback was, well, we can revisit this and see how it goes. Let's give it a try, and we have, but we've never revisited it with several requests to do so. So I'd like to see us bring that back and have some discussion about it so that we're clear on it. It's been kind of that, you vote for it ahead of time, and then you let it happen for a while, and it's nice to go back and reevaluate it. So I'd like to see that done.
And I could agree with Mr. Ruska that it's time to revisit some of this. In particular, I pointed out in my comments that the 2012 Bicycle Master Plan is already badly out of date, and it needs some updating. And some of the very specific points that Mr. Ruska made in his comments, I don't necessarily agree with those, but I do agree that that's a discussion that we should be having. And part of what I'd be willing to do is, a lot of the specific cases that get pointed out are things that are going to be addressed it's the Bicycle Master Plan, but that also includes the pedways, and which feeds into the transit as well. So I think that some of those specific studies are going to deal with some of the specifics. But I'm happy to take a look and let evidence and scientific data determine how we're going to approach these different corridors. And I also agree that not every mode should be in every corridor, but we do need, and where I won't back down is we need to have complete networks for all the different users, and that's the biggest thing that's been missing is those complete networks. So happy to continue this discussion. Don't know if it necessarily needs to be a comprehensive plan.
Bill Levesque. Mitzi, when we come up and look at plans like this, and many of these go back to like had said back in 2009. Can we put a reference into which plan we're looking at? Because I'm sure that plan, if you look at Complete Streets, has probably changed in different editions over time. And this way we know exactly when we're looking at the plan that was put into place. So if there's changes that need to be made or additions or subtractions, we can do that.
We can try to do that for you. I will let you know, though, that the Complete Streets policy was adopted as a component of the comprehensive plan.
Okay.
It wasn't adopted with a whole bunch of other stuff in the plan. It's not part of a particular plan. You have many components to your comprehensive plan, your downtown master plan, the citywide plan, your transportation plan, you have the policy on affordable housing and diversity as part of your comprehensive plan, as is Complete Streets. It's a dispersed document. It's really not actually a compiled document.
Okay.
It's a series of plans. So what I would like to try to do is to try to work our way through the refinement and adoption of this document without drawing strings to these other ones and making this adoption contingent upon us revisiting other things like the bicycle master plan.
That's fair. Mr. Hickey?
Yeah, I'm probably going to not go along with that. So the DMC design guidelines are some of the biggest problems. I mean, as we start to get into this, that passed on a 4-3 with no changes. What we got briefed on 2 weeks ago, that proposed topology for 4th Street is an example. So when we look at this document, when you get to page 3, it talks about expanded transit options. That sounds really good. I mean, who wouldn't want expanded options? We talk about enhancing and making things better. But then in the practice, something like the DMC design guidelines talks about choking down the streets, like the proposal for that topology on 4th Street. I mean, I know it's not the final one, but what was presented to us was eliminating a traffic lane, choking the other traffic lane down to an unsafe 11 feet, and adding 12-foot bike lanes on each side. So 11-foot vehicle lanes and 12-foot bike lanes. So that is not in the Complete Streets policy, which when you read it, for the most part, is a completely reasonable policy. But it's how we've chosen to implement it, for example, in the DMC design guidelines. So if we can't revisit the design guidelines, and this is the capstone document, this is the only place. Because it takes 5, it's the only place I get a voice. So that's where I'm going to be looking for.
The design guidelines are not adopted as part of the city's comprehensive plan. They are not a comp plan document. They are strictly guidance on how to make design decisions as you go forward. I will say, in terms of the expanded transit options, one of the key links to that in this plan is page 7. It's really looking at primary transit network. An expansion of transit options does include development of a bus rapid transit system on those corridors where we actually have high potential to do that.
Mr. Rojic, then Mr. Campion.
Two things. I wanted to follow up. You made you made a statement that 11-foot lanes were unsafe.
Correct.
And do you have any data that would back that up?
How wide is the semi?
Do you have any data that would back that up? And the reason why is there's a lot of data out there that specifically points to 10 and 11-foot lanes being safer. You made a pretty clear statement.
So they're
statement.
Used for traffic calming.
All right.
Why
this
does
doesn't
that
feel okay. Fairly germane.
Now,
so
the second part of this is 4th Street is a good example of what the potential is. We got all the parties together and had a good work session, and we came up with something that was consistent with everybody's needs as a part of having that process, and it's being refined and it can come back to us. There are good ways of doing this consistent with actual real-world data.
Mr. Campion.
So I just want to, I heard possibly two council members kind of state this. I just want to make sure I understand. We're trying to pass a comprehensive plan to work through this process. It sounded like approval for a few council members going to be contingent upon revisiting other documents prior to adoption. If that is the case, if that is your standpoint, that should be on the table right now.
Yeah, good point.
If we're going to hold hostage this process, I'm going to revisit these things, we need to know that. And additionally, I would hope you would be clear about if we revisit the design guidelines and they're passed again on a 4-3, if you will simply not pass the comprehensive plan because of that. Is everything we're going to do now going to require 5 votes, and are we going to hold this hostage until that happens? I think that is a very important development I wasn't aware of.
I was looking for a response.
So this is what process we're going through here. We'll see what changes get made, and then we'll vote again.
Okay, so I would just want to be clear, because what you said was very different, and I'm not trying to...
So I think I was saying it appears that we're not going to revisit the design guidelines. We didn't actually go through them and talk about them the first time, so it seems unlikely we're going to revisit them now.
And to clarify, your statement would imply that because we're not going to revisit these, that is a non-starter and you will not support the comprehensive plan no matter what.
No, I never said that.
Okay, that's good that we clarified that.
I think what I'm hearing is there's a little bit of reluctance whenever we have a plan that makes reference to other plans, and which may or may not need revisiting or may change, and it creates potential conflict between an overarching comprehensive plan and the subservient plans, and it's creating a little bit of discomfort.
Well, I think, though, what Mitzi had said makes a lot of sense. As long as she can tell us which plans are hooked into this versus which ones are not, that's where we need to understand it. I think that helps everybody understand what we're locked into and what we're not.
Mr. Ruskin, do you want to have a comment?
No, go ahead. All right.
Time's valuable. All right, moving to page 3 of Ms. Baker's document. Speaking for myself, similarly, I did not have any comments on this page because, once again, it addressed what I thought were some of our core responsibilities about establishing networks, transportation networks, managing urban growth patterns, etc. So I didn't have too much of an issue with that. Just a quick comment, though, on the fourth bullet, which talks about new and improved transportation. I want to be careful as we go forward that we don't try to force or engineer solutions that public may not want or adopt. And the example I've given in the past would be things like rideshare. I think most people would agree rideshare is great, right? Why don't I buddy up with my neighbor and ride to work? But then how many people actually do it? Because, well, you know, I might have to run out during the day. I have to get the kids. I want the autonomy. So how people actually behave versus the options that are available to them might run counter. So I'm not saying this statement should change or get taken out or anything like that. It's just something I want to be cognizant of as we would go forward with implementation. Mr. Campion.
I just wanted to point out one thing, and it probably, the pendulum is always swinging, so I understand wanting to balance this. My only comment was that I think the plan actually does a pretty, it attempts to declare a little bit of a shift from the existing annexation process, and I felt like the qualification of that was perhaps missing from this kind of unity document. One of the points, and it was not a fine point, I think it was pretty broad in the document, was about what are the changes in our stance regarding probably annexation and growth on the edges of the city. In particular, there was a lot of discussion of the different, I'll call them rings of, they're not rings, but they're different kind of like boundary levels for what we would qualify as for annexable property and non-annexable property, and kind of a discussion of what would have to happen to move properties amongst different classifications. I think for the unity document, or whatever we want to call it, the framework summary, if we want to call it that, it would at least be important that we call out, and I think exactly what you just said, that it's about better discernment and management of edge growth, and that we are focusing more about the financial productivity of the land that's being created. That those are both, to me, throughout the entirety of the plan, if we lose those two aspects, that would really be a problem for the overall plan moving forward. So I just saw those missing from the like what's new section of this, and I thought they're really important, and I think it's also important that we communicate those to the broader community. So,
with the clarification that you gave, I'm okay with whatever it takes to clarify that, because when you first said rideshare, I was thinking TNC, which is I was just confused about. But when you say rideshare, carpooling, yeah, I totally get that. It's the old saying that 98% of Americans support transit for other people, and same kind of thing goes on here. So we can clarify it, but I think a lot of this is not necessarily going to be driven by people's preferences as much as it is economic reality. I mean, you get a new employee at Mayo, what do they tell you? You get parking. I think they just tell you you'll never get parking now. And that, yeah, but you're an old-timer, so. But I think that just having some clarifying language in there is the idea is options, not necessarily that's the only way that's going to get done, but, you know, there'll probably be economic consequences for doing things other ways, too.
Mitzi? I think it's really important to recognize that how a community grows and how the transportation systems are shaped and where different land uses are located has a significant impact on how people live their lives and whether or not the places they want and need to get to are convenient and accessible, whether or not they're pushed into a vehicle to drive because that's really the only option, or whether or not they have choices that include transit and other options like walking and biking. So when I hear people express concerns about decisions that might force social behaviors, the decisions we make every single day, and even the system we have in place today, forces decisions. And they're decisions that are very auto-oriented today. What we've tried to suggest in this plan is that we offer more choices for a more diverse community. Not that we eliminate choices for some, but we expand those choices so folks who are not able to afford or to depend on an automobile have more options available to them, both in terms of lifestyle, where they live, and where they have choices to have better access to goods and services, education, jobs, and so forth.
And I think, once again, I'm fast-forwarding a little bit to the implementation stage. I know that one of the proposals is that we establish a variety of park-and-ride nodes or hubs. Mm-hmm. We can engineer that, no problem. But how are we going to change behavior that people will actually use them? Why would they? What's going to make it palatable enough for someone to actually park there and then, you know, take another form of transit to their final destination? That will be the tricky part. It's more of a rhetorical question.
Yeah.
That gets into that balance I talk about engineering the solution, but then how do we actually make it palatable?
I think a big part of it's going to come down to people's pocketbooks, because people get furious if one gas station's at 239 and the other's at 242. They'll make sure they go to the 239, regardless of how much gas they burn getting there. The same way, if it's if these park and ride lots are at a cost of $10 a day and parking downtown for a full day is $150, people will self-select economically.
And I think it goes back to really another part of it goes back to what Mr. Staver talked about when he talked about the ride sharing system. He wants to make sure that he has the availability or the possibility to go. If his car is parked out at the fairgrounds, he wants to make sure he has access to it so he can do things throughout the day. Making sure that we have a reliable transportation piece put into place so that he could get there within a reasonable time, be that 15, 20 minutes of when he needs to be there. That's another part of it. So that's a part of us building a good transportation network to make it so that Mr. Staver feels comfortable. And I'm just using it as an example. I'm not saying it first, but to make sure that he feels comfortable so he's willing to use that, knowing that if he has to leave his workplace or whatever business he has downtown, that he has a reliable method to get to his vehicle to get to do what he needs to do.
One of the great things in here, too, with the PTN is there's a threshold right around 12 to 15 minutes that once the transit runs that frequently, people don't care about the schedule anymore. They just know it's going to be there when they need it.
Right.
And that is something that, you know, makes parking rides less desirable today, is if you're only getting out there, you know, 40 minutes or an hour,
right. That's
not fun.
Well, and again, we'll have to pay great attention to implementation. Otherwise, again, just because we say it doesn't make sure it will happen.
Correct.
Mr. Cantor.
And I think that's an important distinction, and maybe gets to a little bit of the friction about this document, is that this document doesn't make things happen. This kind of document is laying out what we're pointing at. You know, when we have to set sail our ship in a direction, this shouldn't be 10 feet in front of us, this should be 30 years in front of us, where we want to be. And this document should be getting us there. So to call out and tell people that we're looking at arranging our park and rides like that, that's imperative because other people are going to make investments. Mayo is going to start looking at where should we invest in making our structured parking. Other employers are going to figure out that maybe downtown parking is going to be getting a lot harder. They're going to choose to locate certain areas. It's a really important document for feeding information out to the community about how is the city going to make its investments. I don't necessarily disagree with you along the lines of this won't make it happen, and we are not engineering the solution. But if we don't tell them when we try and make it happen, they'll go, but I already made this investment downtown. I already made this investment on the other side of town, and now you don't know where it's going. This is about collaboration with the community. We need to make sure that we're all on the same page because they're making $200 million investment they've made over the last couple of years, Mayo, and the rest of the private community is making $50 million worth of investment. We need to try and find a way to harness this all together so it's in the right direction. I just want to reiterate that about this plan and hopefully get off of the mechanics of a particular lane with
Ms. Baker.
I know it's not all that evident in a 10-page document, but I want to assure you that this concept of these parking rides is actually very closely coordinated with the existing public transit system, the existing parking ride system, which most of these already have parking ride systems in place where these bubbles are. But it's also part of the benefit of having this joint department in which we do the regional transportation planning as well, and understanding where our commuter sheds are and the volumes of traffic coming in from different locations. So we're accounting not just for people coming in on commuter buses, but also those who are driving in, and looking at locations where it makes the most sense to capture those trips and convert them into a bus trip to get them into the downtown. We simply cannot get all the cars downtown. It's a system that works really, really well today. The city operates that system with the park and rides. But Mayo also operates that with our shuttle lines. And we are extremely fortunate to have a major employer in our downtown who's part of a coordinated strategy. And we work with the transportation staff there as well in looking at how we can put these things, all these different moving parts together to align them so we're actually all moving in the same direction. So I actually have great confidence in this system as being a really important piece to getting more and more people in and out of downtown.
It's a great point, and I get that. What about the people that aren't male, that are downtown, that are, you know, I mean, how do we include them in that plan or in that, you know, involvement so that we don't have all, you know, there's a lot of other people that aren't male downtown too, and how do they have an easy way that they know that they can be part of this?
I'm so glad you asked. And yes, there is. Actually, there is a Downtown Transportation Management Association that is in the stages of being developed. There's already a steering committee for that. It includes other downtown employers, and that's exactly why, because Mayo is a major employer, single employer in our downtown, but we have like 13,000 or more other employees in our downtown who work for other entities. So they're coming around the table to help to develop the policies that will support communications and messaging and bus passes and strategies that will allow those employees to have the kind of information they need to know that they have options and they have other choices that they can make. To make it easier for them to know where those park and rides are, how to get the bus passes, where to get them, but also to know that there's a guaranteed ride home. If they happen to use that and something happens during the day and have to leave or they have to work late, they have a guaranteed ride home. There will be an entire marketing strategy that will be built around this Transportation Management Association, and I believe actually in the next week or so they're going to be selecting a name for it. They've narrowed it down to two.
And when have we ever disagreed with names?
Well, the beauty of this is that you're engaging the downtown employers to make these decisions. It's not a staff decision. It's about them. So these are all excellent questions, and I have to say, you know, all the different planning initiatives going on, again, from the ROCOG level, from county boundaries to the city plan, to the DMC, to the core of the downtown. We've been in a role of trying to coordinate all these things to make sure they are in alignment, and I have a lot of hope.
Good.
And I was going to say, I understand Mr. Campion's comment about, you know, trying to put something down. that gives sets a direction and gives others something that they can in turn react to as well. And I think part of what I struggle with is I'm also trying to temper that, what we write, with a sense of reality. We are a society that values our independence. We don't like to be inconvenienced. And if it's going to inconvenience me 15 minutes to have to, you know, get from this point A to my final destination, I'll drive my car, unless it's absolutely impossible. But those are just some of the realities that we can't necessarily ignore, is all I'm saying. Mr. Wojcik.
I think that it's something that's, there's some generational change. So people that are younger than me, particularly in big cities, have adopted some other things, in part because the services are so much better and the quality of life is so much better to, you know, in their case, potentially live car-free. And I think that as long as those options are there, I think that's a lot of what this is driving at.
I would just add that I'm not naive enough to believe that reality won't immediately intercede in whatever plan we lay out. I think that that's just the nature of trying to put the stuff on paper. Is as soon as we get it on paper, reality is going to intercede, and we're going to find out we planned a park and ride over a sinkhole or something like that. That's what but I hope we don't let that stand in our way of the effort here, which is just trying to communicate what we think will work. And especially when we're under such tight budgets all the time, I feel like if we lack that plan, we really lack the framework to start making decisions about prioritizing capital improvement projects. So I would hope we can kind of value that at least as a gauge for where we're going to put those dollars.
Hey, one other thing, too, is just the power of having that primary transit network, that key piece laid out. And it's only, you know, of our 500 miles of roadway, it's, what, 15, 20 miles of roadway. Just controlling the land use planning and, you know, capacity management of something like that is such a long-term cost savings as opposed to trying to build it after 20 years of whatever else might happen in the meantime.
All right, ready to move on to the next page? All right, page 4. So I had a comment on the top of the page, there's two sub-bullets, and I wasn't quite sure. The comment about establishing a policy on great connections to great places. And the thought struck me that I think we want to be careful not to tie a document that should be relatively long-lived. I understand we'll review it periodically, but it should be relatively long-lived. So anytime we reference something that might be contemporary, here today, gone tomorrow, I'm not. Gives me a little bit of discomfort, and it goes a little bit to our discussion earlier about tying elements of the comprehensive plan to other sub-plans, if you will. Mm-hmm. And so I just want to be careful we're not using language we understand today or vernacular that we understand today and it becomes part of the comprehensive plan, a guiding document, and it means nothing or is hard to relate to in a year. That's all.
And I agree with what I would agree completely with that sentiment that I don't want to do that either. Tie us to, and in this particular case, I'm not too concerned because a lot of this gets taken up in the zoning, particularly the new zones that we're creating as part of a separate document. I think, you know, to the extent that it's laid out here as some, you know, good guidance, I think we could all agree that we want really high quality connections in the community. And how that gets done is probably going to be a reflection on what the zoning codes we pick up are.
Well, and that's why I followed that comment by saying that the first sub-bullet, which talks about enhancing streetscapes and mm-hmm. form scale, that captures what I thought should be in a plan. Mm-hmm. That's all. Mr. Campion.
So maybe this also gets, I think your point might also get to some of my concerns about when I think I filed the comments about the zoning the names of the the land use names. Sorry, I'm trying to get the right context here. On page 9, comparison of existing and proposed plan categories. It's that as if we're trying to, I know you're not trying to necessarily pass the framework as a standalone document. My statement was more of, if the effort is to make a document that is representative of what we're all in agreement with, without having some of the backing information, it makes it hard to say, because if you were to just look at this document and say, great connections to great places, my first response would be, you know, what is that? If you go into the broader document, obviously that's laid out a little bit more extensively. So maybe this gets to the point of, is this something we're trying to structure to be standalone, or is this just a reference guide into the larger comprehensive plan effort?
Well, I think it would be helpful for us to know whether or not you support the concept and really support the bullets. So I read that as a support for the concept, but then the details and the words of the document is then where we make some edits. I will just give you one example of where this concept would be applied. We have this tremendous natural environment and public park system asset that if you're in certain locations in the city, you might be 2 or 3 blocks from it and not have a clue it's even there. So Silver Lake is a great example. If you're on Center Street, you're on 7th Street, you're on 13th Street, major intersections, you're coming from the west, you don't know that that's there. There's nothing that guides you there. There are no visual cues. There's not a greenway that pulls you into that space and invites you. It's not connected. It's very disconnected. It's not even evident that it's an asset that's available to the community. So as we talked about this, the concept was, when 7th Street is reconstructed, it really should be an opportunity to then build that visual connection and make sure that people understand there's a great asset here and that they feel very connected to it and bring the neighborhood from the west side of Broadway to that asset on the east side. That's just an example.
Okay.
I feel like we didn't actually address your concern.
Yeah.
I have the same one. It's when you quote something like that, is there a document outside of the comprehensive plan I should be looking at? Like when terminology like great connections to great places gets quoted, I started to go look for documents elsewhere. But this is
trying to define it in here.
This is a reference to a section of the document.
We tried to wrap it in here and actually use an example like 7th Street in Silver Lake.
Can you give examples of where that you included, you know, try to wrap that in? Cause I'm
page 240 of section 2. Google's got you indexed now, fortunately.
And maybe that will become more apparent as we go through and detail those sections.
Section 2?
Your section 3. That's right.
All right. That one was really an incidental comment. I really had a question on 3 of the bullets down below in implementation strategies. A couple of questions more than anything. The very first bullet talks about creation of detailed small area plan. I just wanted to make sure that, you know, a lot of work has been done historically to codify small areas in the current plan. I was hoping you're not saying we're going to throw those out because probably in councils that preceded us, they went through a lot of pain to create those in probably at the explicit wishes of the neighborhoods and what they encompass. So I just wanted to make sure we weren't going to necessarily throw those out and start over with new small area plans.
Well, to clarify that, the neighborhood plans that were done are actually, they're, I guess, scaled back versions of that were adopted into the comprehensive plan, into the existing land use plan. It's part of the neighborhood section at the very end of it. So, if you wish to retain specific ones for more recently done neighborhood plans, you will need to take that action when you adopt this document to retain those others, those specific ones, the neighborhood ones. This document is not intended to replace the downtown master plan, the Second Street corridor plan, and some of the other small area plans outside of specific neighborhoods, because they were adopted as separate documents. We need to clarify that, like, in a table.
Yeah, I think I was referring more so to the neighborhood plans, because if I look at the current comp plan, I believe there's one called out for the Slatterly neighborhood. I wouldn't want us to adopt this plan and the Slatterly neighborhood suddenly go, oh, wait, hey, where'd our our plan go that kind of explicitly defined our little corner of the world. Those are the ones that I don't want to lose track of.
The Planning Commission's recommendation is to retain those plans in the final action. So we can bring that forward to you.
That was my question. The fourth bullet down talks about creation of design guides or pattern books, etc. One of the things that, so who does that, I guess, is and that gets into the implementation again, because I think in many respects, we, and I include myself in that, we and engineers and so forth are maybe the worst ones to do that. I'm going to look to the professional developers, designers, architects, landscape architects, etc., to create the design guides and so forth. I just wanted to make sure that we weren't taking on that sort of responsibility, because I don't know that we're qualified.
And I would agree with that statement.
Oh, sorry. Ouch. Wow, zinger.
Well, no, I
push that tape just whatever's left.
The intention is to have novices try to put something together that conveys what opportunities there are for redevelopment in our community. It's then to go and seek out the right skill sets of people to bring that document or those documents forward. I have a stack of different transit-oriented pattern books, if you will, on my office table. And they're not there to tell people this is how you have to develop. They're there for communities like ours, what we don't do and we haven't done transit-oriented development in our past. We need to be able to communicate to people what that can look like and what different ways you can approach that and how you might go about it. So I think we'd be seeking out some professional assistance in preparing something like that.
And I think part of the reason I reacted that way is because there have been projects in months gone by where we did go run down rabbit holes and talk about color of brick and the balusters and stuff like that that seem like just not an area we should have been involved in. But anyway, this worked.
I would agree that it's best to leave that level of detail to professionals, but specifically to professionals who don't necessarily have skin in the game in a different way, so that we use the professional qualifications, but we also ensure there aren't any conflicts there that are driving it in a certain direction.
Mr. Campion?
I would maybe disagree with Councilmember Woodard just a little bit. Like, I think there's also a place for private developers to come in and propose a district, and to propose together with multiple landowners a district design guideline that we can then review and consider as part of this process. But I would just generally say I agree with the sentiment of Council President Staver that, well, I'll probably stay out of the design game and leave that to the professionals as well.
Anyone else on that?
There's a recording. Okay.
And then the only other bullet I
can't
had,
hear the asterisks.
The only other bullet I had, we really already addressed. It references the complete streets policy, and I had the same comment that needs to be revisited. So that was it for that page. All right. I'm on to page 5. This goes to one of my earlier comments about not wanting to limit ourselves to language or thinking that it is today. So, for example, there's some references to bus rapid transit, several references to that. I would prefer language that really maintains the flexibility. For example, we know that autonomous vehicles are on the horizon. I want to make sure that we have language that allows that sort of flexibility. And I realize I'm asking for both. I don't want nebulous, ambiguous language, but I'm also asking for specifics when and where it makes sense. But this is an area where I would like a bit more flexibility. Mr. Campion and Mr. Wojcik.
I agree. The one caveat I have with this is I like saying BRT here because I actually kind of want to focus other things taking place in the community on what has kind of been widely displayed to be the most viable option for us in terms of a transit system. So I kind of like BRT in that regard and committing at least partially to that for short term. I think leaving the 25-30 year door open to say any other technologies that improve us, including, you know, teleportation or whatever we come up with in that timeline, we're going to leave the door open for.
My only if we view this as a document that is not going to be continually updated, I would be more concerned about potential changing technologies. I think today, at this point in time, bus rapid transit is far and away the most likely outcome. Who knows how AVs are going to advance, but if we maintain this document like we should, we'll be taking a look every 5 years at some of these, and that's on some of these longer range things, I think it's fair to consider updates at those points as well.
Mrs. Baker.
So the autonomous vehicles is kind of a big topic in the planning world these days, and people study transportation. Mm-hmm. We've acknowledged that that is an emerging and changing technology that we do need to continue to monitor. One thing that's worth pointing out, though, is autonomous vehicles doesn't mean that it can't still be a bus rapid transit or an automobile. It just means that it's driven autonomously.
So, don't tell that to the people on my Twitter feed who love to yell at me when I say that's going to happen.
The thing that could change, though, is if the technology advances so that when you have what's called platooning, and you can have 6 or 8 or 10 of these vehicles driving within a very short distance of each other, because the communications between them allows for that, and you can actually platoon and move as one unit, more or less. So that's the kind of thing that we're watching from the transportation side of things. You know, what do we need to know about that? Is the state of Minnesota going to allow it? Right now, you can't even have autonomous vehicles legally in the state of Minnesota operating down the street. So it's a great point, and we will have to continue to monitor that. Sometimes these technologies change very quickly.
Right, and I wasn't discounting bus rapid transit. I was just wanting language that would be more inclusive of a variety of transportation, because you know the reality is, I know we're saying that we want to review the plan more on a more regular basis, but will that happen? I don't know. Look how long it's taken to get through this iteration, and the last one we have had in place with changes, of course, for you know several decades. So I wouldn't assume that we're necessarily going to review and change this document within 5 years.
I'm going to go to a new topic, so maybe there's other comments on that.
I would just follow up and say it's not a fight for today, but I will absolutely make it a passion of mine to ensure that we have a planning department that is capable of updating our documents on a schedule that's appropriate.
Campion. New topic. Yeah. I argued and you countered my argument about an area of Northwest Rochester along Highway 52. I asked for Public Works to be here, but they don't appear to be. I just like a follow-up, because the explanation I received, and maybe you already know, the explanation I received was, we have lift wells in the area, lift stations in the area. They would have to be moved and or reconfigured to be used for this new land. And I just want to, like, I want there to be a thin red line between any public outlay and lands that require no public investment, no change of existing utilities. This is shovel-ready sites, and I just want that designation to be very clear. And I think, in particular, this area is going to be ripe for the sort of development that happens along major corridors, which is large, big box, commercial development that I've seen in other communities take very substantial investment to support. Mm-hmm. So I just, when I saw that designation, it immediately jumped to my attention that might not be appropriate for a 2040 discussion, or prior to 2040 discussion. So I'd like a little bit of comeback, particularly from Public Works, about what needs to happen for that area to be developable. I've sent a map. I hope everyone saw the map, but it's a pretty small area of discussion.
And we're on that page, and I had a related comment. I just wanted to make sure that now with the new 55th Street, 48th Street corridor, that we are appropriately designating that corridor, the lands adjoining that corridor. I think, as we all know, a new significant corridor like that will attract attention, and much as we saw with East and West Circle Drive, as soon as they were created, you know, development happened. And so for whatever the appropriate designation is, I'm not sure. I just wanted to raise that flag and say, let's make sure we look at that corridor in particular, because it's pr- pretty appealing, I'll bet, for a lot of developers.
So if I read this conversation right, it sounds like we're on page 6. So we're looking at the urban area growth map?
I kind of took it as a section. They look. I mean, it's the growth management framework is both pages, right? Anyway, we're on page 6.
Okay, so looking at the map on page 6, I did want to point out, so just to follow up from Nick's comments about the area around 65th Street that's yellow on the map, the area west of 52 is primarily annexed and most of that's developed. So that's where Menards is. There's a frontage road partway up that way and some platted lands. On the east side, the southern part of that parcel between Overland Drive and 75th Street is already platted and developed and in the city. So it's really the northern
I wish
part
I could have,
of this, right?
You're lucky I didn't have my Photoshop ready, because I would have zoned right into that area. Because it's the cultural land that's sitting out there at the junction of 75th Street and 52.
Okay.
That's where they won't. I know that's going to be a hot area to build commercial in. We just need to approach it when it's right. That was my...
So I'll follow up with Public Works on the comments regarding the existing lift station and capacity needed. Regarding 55th Street extension, the precarious issue there is that so much of that land on the north side falls off to the north. So it is not serviceable with gravity flow sewer. There are large lot subdivisions out there already that are an impediment to urban growth. And so the location of that roadway was incredibly difficult to navigate because of the mining pits that were already out there, the waterways, and then the topography. Unfortunately, we're left with some of that investment that won't be realized with a more urban advantage to it, to be quite honest. And that's just part of the nature of that.
And I'm not advocating for a change today or in the near future. It's just something to be cognizant of. I think developers are a pretty resourceful bunch. And so impediments like topography and so forth, they will try to resolve.
So it's all the area south of there is 2040 and before, right?
Right. So there's the new 55th Street takes a sharp turn to the south and then to the east.
Right.
When it starts to turn south, all that stuff is in the growth area for 2040. So it is being shown for the areas that could be served.
Okay. It was just more of an observation than anything. I wasn't looking for a change.
Just since we're looking at, I'm looking at page 6 again right now. Out if you follow 2nd Street out or County Road 34, my assumption is the large lot area out there is what's already exists today. This north of 2nd Street or County Road 34.
Yes.
And it's just on the south side, I noticed that we have that urban reserve area for growth beyond 2050, and I mean, I'm just, the sewer is good, as there's approved development that gets the sewer extension to that area anyway right now. Is there something else that's constraining that till that 2050 time frame?
I don't know, Jeff, you have a memory on that one. We see the capacity.
I'm not familiar. I don't know the specific design of the extension you're talking through the whole golf course.
Yeah, this is everything just to the west of the golf course.
Again, it could be capacity downstream from that
could
extension.
Be.
They wanted to fix the golf course, and that will take up probably the majority of the capacity left in the line there in the big line that goes north.
Gotcha. All right, thanks.
Okay, move on. All right, page 7, which just shows the primary transit hub concept. Already commented on that earlier. It's if you build it, will they come, kind of thing. So I didn't have any other comments on that page.
Can we assume that there's strong consensus around this? Because it's really the framework, the whole plan was built around. It's part of the major framework. Okay.
Mr. Campbell?
Yeah, I have consensus on this.
Absolutely, absolutely love it.
I was just trying to feign, you know. I mean, getting all serious down there.
Okay. And page 8 is not necessarily a policy statement here. It's really just trying to convey that If you build it, will they come? It is an iterative process. There have to be development investments that happen with transit investments, and it's a staged implementation. So that was just trying to keep everybody in check with reality.
Yeah, I just wouldn't want anyone to be misled by thinking, well, if we build these park and rides, there, we're done. Mission accomplished. The work has only begun.
I ultimately, my eye is drawn to what looks like a little bit of an eyesore in the northwest corner of this map. What's the road intersections there that are being used? Do we know yet, or is it?
I'm not sure. I'm following.
There's two purple dots that I believe represent Mayo facilities out on West Circle Drive, but I can't really understand the loop there. There's some sort of.
Hey, John.
Page 7, northwest corner of the PTN network. There's, like, it looks like the roads jog a little bit in a few spots. I'm just wondering if somebody can describe that route to me. Because I can't zoom in.
Could be the old railroad, too.
Yeah, that's what that is, right?
The lower one is the Valley High Drive.
Purple.
Parallel line to Valley High Drive, the old railroad right-of-way, which gets up in that area. Bought Pole Railroad right away, and the car's got a bike path on it.
Yeah.
So that would be possibly used for a bus line only, dedicated bus line. So that's the only thing coming up from the southeast. The west side is West Circle Drive.
And it's 37th Street is the east-west there on the north side. Is it going down Valley High Drive from West Circle Drive to 37th Street? Is that what that kind of weird jog is there?
Yeah, okay. That's what that.
All right.
That trail's so, still there. Goes up.
Okay. Got it. It's a great concept.
It's publicly owned land that we didn't vacate.
Move on.
Yep.
Page 8, I don't know if there's any comment on that page. All right.
Oh, yeah, my comment still stands. I hope that's clear. If page 9, you said?
8.
Oh, page 8. My condolences.
Now I'm up to page 9. Why don't you start off?
I don't necessarily have a plan with anything, a problem with anything here, but I'll just reiterate that point. I actually don't see the harm necessarily in starting with the adoption of a framework document, and if we're working to do that, which I'm not sure we are yet, so don't get too jittery. I'm just saying, if we were to start with that, my one comment was, there's not enough here to adopt this, because just saying like I'm in favor of these really means nothing. These have no meaning. They're just names until you get that other document to marry them up to. And generally, I thought the document did a pretty good job of laying them out. So.
And I think my comments kind of dovetail with that. And I look specifically at the Central Business District, and the proposal there is to subdivide that into multiple. And I don't have definition enough to go by, but I know that the CBD is pretty finite piece of land, and with all of these possibilities there, I thought, does that get to be a kind of a nightmare? You could potentially have, you know, a different zone, if you will, or use literally from one block to the next, and does that get to be a real mess? Typically, there's, you know, a bit more boundary than the Central Business District is really a confined space. So anyway, I was questioning that.
Can I walk through this page?
Yep.
I think it might actually help to answer some of the concerns and questions. So if you start on the left side of the page, we have the existing residential. There are three designations: low density, medium density, high density. The set of boxes just to the right of them are simply showing how we're proposing to grow that to include traditional neighborhood and neighborhood destinations. So it's retaining the three and it's adding two.
So, and great point. So, and maybe I'm missing some of the definitions here. So what's your definition of a traditional neighborhood? Does it have to be in existence 20 years, 30 years, 50 years before it qualifies?
So pages 131 through 154 actually lay out the characteristics, the desired pattern, the range of densities, the uses, and the locations for each one of these categories. So it helps to define, what does this mean? Where are they? And what kind of characteristics do they have? We don't have to have consensus on this today, but I still think it's worth walking through the chart. So when we talk about the Central Business District, we're actually only suggesting that we add one more layer to that, and that would be the downtown fringe, because there are different characteristics to that than there are in the central part of the business district in terms of feathering and transitioning into neighborhoods. We think that could be a little bit more clearly defined. The yellow boxes you see on the bottom part of that chart are mixed-use transit centers, mixed-use transit corridors, and then a transit-supported neighborhood corridor. Those are not intended to be in the Central Business District. This was just simply a way of communicating. These are all different styles of mixed use, with the downtown core being one major mixed-use district. But then these others don't belong in the downtown, but we need those designations so we can address that primary transit network in the nodes and corridors. The next, looking at the ones with the dark blue box at the top, where you have existing non-residential, commercial, industrial, and light industrial business park. The proposal next to that is just expanding and modifying the language only slightly. It's more or less retaining them, but it's changing the words a little bit. And if you go through the document here, I think what we're doing is actually adding flexibility to what you can do within those spaces. And then if you look to the far right, there are major anchors in the existing plan, including medical district. We have parks and open space and major campuses, but we didn't map them in the old plan. We're simply suggesting that we convey those in a new map. So, like the RCTC campus, it's clearly it's there, but it would be more clearly mapped if we called it out as that instead of just low density residential, because it's really not a residential neighborhood. So, and same with the airport is just to convey again more clearly what it is. So that doesn't get you into all the descriptions. I was hoping that we could, in concept, agree that we do need some new categories and that this might be a reasonable approach to how we do that. Again, how those are defined and the characteristics of them is not what I'm asking for consensus on, because that's in hand.
And that explanation helps, because I did see the definitions, but as I was reading the chart, reading from left to right, the residential, and then as I tried to read the downtown central business, I misunderstood that what you were trying to convey there. So, anyone else? Mr. Ruska.
Mitzi, in the page 132 in the book, it says traditional downtown neighborhood development areas, and then in the chart it just says traditional neighborhood. So are we referring to just that box on page 133 that shows that area? I mean, we have some pretty traditional neighborhoods around the city that aren't necessarily in there. So, in other words, that the proposed residential should be traditional downtown neighborhood, just not in that box. Is that how we're going to move this forward, or is it going to be traditional neighborhoods?
I have to verify that, and I think you make an excellent point. There are certainly some neighborhoods up and down Broadway to the east and west that are older, smaller lot developments that have very similar characteristics to those that are very near to the downtown. So I think we need to visit that in our mapping and in the language.
Mr. Campion?
And I would just offer that it may make sense to broaden, but also be aware of, depending on how long you've been in Rochester, you might consider, the Elton Hills neighborhood might be an older neighborhood or, a traditional neighborhood. How we're going to declare this and some of the terminology around it, I think, is going to be important to make sure that it's indicative of exactly. You use small, what do we call small lot?
Small lots. Pre-World War II is
roads are straight.
Right.
To measure them against.
I agree. Like the old Crossroads neighborhood, there was to have the Quonset huts. Those are, that fits that now because it's small. Yeah, that's way back in the, that's way back in the 60s.
Wow. Thanks a lot. There's very few.
What was it like?
Quonset huts.
Well, sometimes you got to bring a little history to the
I don't even know what he's talking about.
Ms. Baker.
Mindful of the clock here and your time, and I just wanted to share one more thing with you before we part today. First, I thank you all for submitting your comments, for having the conversation today. I think it helps ground our staff in a place where we can move forward from. We need to continue our conversations, and we look forward to that. One thing I've heard from a number of different sources is the length of the plan is a little daunting. that's a lot of material to read. But, you know, Rochester's a really smart city, and we set the bar pretty high in terms of trying to develop a plan that was exemplary, something that models after award-winning plans in the U.S. that helps to guide the growth of this community in the future and helps to convey to future investors and current investors the kind of things they may anticipate in terms of public investment and where we want to encourage the private investment. I did look through just today and did a little bit of checking in. What are some other benchmark plans, some other examples and links of those documents, just so I had an idea. So the Nashville Next plan in 2016 won the American Planning Association National Planning Excellence Award. It's called the Daniel Burnham Award for Comprehensive Plan. It's over 1,000 pages. I don't think they have any in print, but you can go out online and see all the different sections. Plan Cincinnati won that same award in 2014, and it's 246 pages. The New York City Waterfront Plan, which is just for the waterfront, not a citywide plan, it's just for the waterfront front. They won that award in 2012, and it's 192 pages. We have over 56 square miles. We have a complex set of issues that we're trying to address, and we are trying to trim down the plan document, but I think it's really important that we don't trim so much out that people don't understand why we even have the direction in there. And some of that explanation does help people understand the context of our growth and what to anticipate and the why behind the recommendations in it. Some others that I pulled, these were not award-winning plans, but I pulled them. Ola, Kansas, 280 pages. Greenville, North Carolina, 256. Boulder Valley Comp Plan, 170. And Des Moines, Iowa, 144. I think we're in the range of an average length for a document. So I just want to put that out there as something to.
And I think when I originally made the comment, the thing I was reacting to is I realized the document was created in three distinct pieces. And in doing so, things carried over and there's some repetitiveness. It's the low-hanging fruit is what I'm looking at. Now that we're looking at this document in its entirety, we really don't need to repeat things, you know, substantially into Section 2 and Section 3. That's all.
And we agree and we're trimming those pieces out.
I'm sorry?
We agree, and we are trimming those repetitive areas.
And I know you're working on that iteration, Mr. Woger.
So just a logistical question. Today is the 5th, then we've got effectively two more Committee of the Whole meetings before this comes back to the Council on the 21st. Do we need to schedule any additional meetings or have any additional, or just do you want one-on-one work with Council members who have other questions, or... What is the how do we ensure that this is as ready as possible come the 21st?
Well, let me ask this. We've received comments on the entire plan document from at least one or two of you, not from everyone. Does anyone else have comments they wish to submit or any other concerns you have that we can receive so that we can systematically go through the potentially substantive edits? Highlight areas for policy discussion. I don't think we can realistically have everything wrapped up with the anticipation of adopting this on the 21st. It takes a lot of time to go through this and make those edits and bring it back to you in a track changes form so you can see what we've changed. Some of you will agree with those changes, and some of you may not. And so there, we have disagreement, will be areas for discussion.
Yeah, the 21st certainly is an opportunity to gather one more element, you know, the public comment that we would entertain in our whatever final decision. Mr. Ruska?
One of the things that I'd like to see done is to have the Bicycle Advisory Committee, and they were supposed to report to us in October of last year, and that got pulled, and we never heard from them, and now today I see they've got requests for additional members on there, and a lot of this stuff revolves around plans that tie into the transit, a lot of policies on it. So I guess I'd like to get a report from them here soon and understand where they're at with everything. And we're putting a lot of weight on some of the decisions and the things that they've got in the process. And we haven't heard an update from them for a long time. And I think there's a few of us that noted that this thing is quite old, 2012. A lot of changes have happened since then. So I would like to see an update from them on this soon.
The bicycle master plan that we have today was actually developed by the planning department in concert with the bike pedestrian advisory committee that used to report to Roca. As a planning effort, I can't imagine that can be programmed with staff's time in 2018. We've already had our work program and allocation of time divided. This is taking more time than we anticipated, so other things are already going to be planned. So I don't know if your hope is to have the plan in itself in its entirety revisited and worked on in 2018, but I'm just trying to be realistic, but I don't think that that's likely.
Yeah, I just want to throw out the revisit word, and I get it that there's some disconcern, you know, you're concerned about certain aspects, but like revisiting something can mean a lot, and I want to make sure we're setting planning staff up correctly. Like, is this addressing like one or two issues, or is this redoing the complete streets plan or one of these other plans that we started talking about today? Because I do think those are significant undertakings. That's not, you know, if revisit is simply get together to chat about it, that's one thing. But if it's to get together and actually try to change that policy document, I think that's going to be a lot of different work. That's why I kind of balked at the idea of triggering or delaying an adoption of this document until we adopt that document, because that's not an effort that's underway. That could take, I think the first time it took almost a year, if I remember correctly. So,
Mr. Hickey? Yeah, so I mean, along those same lines, I mean, I think it would be helpful. So right now, that's the plan of record, and as Mr. Wojcik has stated, it's outdated. If we had, at least for me, if I had a better idea of how we're tying in this bicycle network, where it's appropriate, instead of getting a piecemeal, I brought up the example of the 4th Street, where we're going to convert vehicle lanes to bicycle lanes. Maybe if I had a better idea how this fits into the big picture, so how that informs the comprehensive plan, I don't know, but it's, I mean, that's what we're talking about, is how we're getting around the city and how we're going to plan development in that regard.
Would you like me to have somebody send out a link to the bike master plan or to get a printed copy of it?
No, I've got it. Right. It's just not up to date, and I don't think it reflects. So, you know, what are we doing?
I think part of it, too, is we're working with certain voids in the data. I know we're using traffic data, for example, as we talk about redesign of certain streets and corridors. I would hope to see equally concrete data that would substantiate why there would or should be bicycle lanes in a particular corridor. They need to work in concert with one another, not, you know, one set of data and a guess on the other. I don't know. Well, we are past the appointed hour. It's been good discussion. As I understand it, from the conclusion here, Mitzi, you've got a lot of notes and some revisions that you'll undertake to enhance this document. And then next week, we would begin with discussion of Section 3. Is that
correct?
Still the plan?
Yep.
All right. Is there anything else then for this afternoon, Mr. Reimer?
Just a heads up on, if you look at the upcoming COW meetings, you can see it's getting extremely crowded. But there's a lot of significant things happening. I've seen this organization above me on just the comp plan. Comp plan is taking a significant amount of time, so there's still areas that we need to add to this. So a couple things. One is, just ask for understanding some flexibility with maybe rearranging some order, depending on timing. The North Police Station hasn't been programmed back in, and we're ready to come back to the follow-up conversation with you. That's a good example. There are a few other things that have been brought up. One that I noticed as well is we have the school district cooperative busing studies that have been going on. So the phase one study is done. We want to get back that back to you. Right now it's programmed into the middle of March. I would suggest that we bring it back next week. And hopefully it can be a shortened discussion. We'll get out some information ahead of time. I think if we wait an additional 5-6 weeks on that, could delay, if the council wants to move forward, it would be prudent to make a decision
allow that to go forward. I believe the school district has already made that decision. We're just waiting for the council.
And I think that's good. Superintendent Munoz was talking about that at a meeting this morning, and they would love to see that moved along.
So, just as an example, so next week we may revise that.
Mr. Zimmer?
Just want to piggyback on that. Either March 5th or March 19th, we need to have a meeting to review the integrated DMC transportation studies, because that goes to the DMC board on the 22nd of March. So,
it's in the 19th right now.
Yeah, 19th or.
Okay.
Which was today. That one we really need to have in front of you.
All right. Mr. Wilkett?
No, I think the fact that the busing one's coming back next week, I'm good.
All right. So remember, we're meeting a little early, 6:30 this evening before the meeting.
Let me throw out one thing for other business here, and could take it up tonight too. But one of the things I was made aware of is the homeless population in Rochester is substantial enough now that apparently last week they were cutting cards at one of the shelters to see who got to stay inside for the night. And it became aware that the heating space at the Salvation Army operates when it's below zero Fahrenheit, but not necessarily other freezing temperatures. And I would request that somebody in administration or somebody, some staff member, get back to us with what the continuum of coverage is for access to heat for the homeless population, because from what I'm hearing, there are potentially some gaps that are in there right now, and it was not something I was aware of until last week. So I would either like consensus to have someone on staff look at this, or we'll just bring it up tonight.
So we would be asking the various nonprofits or private entities what their criteria are, whether it be Salvation Army or someone else?
Yeah, I'm trying to think if there's any public agencies that would play into this as well, but it would be basically to establish the continuum of coverage, because those little pamphlets we publish on resources for the homeless doesn't necessarily cover where some of these gaps appear to be. And if there are people sleeping out in the cold, I want to know about it.
Paul Fleissner and Community Services might be a good contact for them.
Right.
I don't know if there's some other incidents, but they do have a homeless service team. So they probably have some of the inventory on resources.
You know, what would be helpful is just simply to ask staff to find the information. Maybe Paul's where to go for it.
And maybe that's a conversation that's easiest if Mr. Fleissner is present and we could have that conversation and ask questions rather than try to anticipate.
Right, and but I'm just hoping to get the information as quickly as possible, because it sounds, based on what I was hearing, if you drew the wrong card last week, you were sleeping outside.
Mr. Hickey.
So what are we asking? Someone's going to call around to the social services in the county, or what are we doing?
We are putting together a document that would identify any gaps in the continuum of coverage for homeless individuals.
What does that mean? What's a continuum of coverage?
What happens if the currently used facilities are full? When are these facilities operating? When is it that people are being pushed outside in the freezing temperatures?
How is any individual facility going to know? They just know if they're full. I mean, maybe come.
I am confident in our staff's ability to handle this.
I think it's a question.
Well, that's why I agree. You know, county services might be in a better position to know that. I'm not sure any of our staff.
Oh, so is there consensus to ask our staff to pursue it, even if it involves contacting them, or do I bring it up tonight?
Again, I'm not sure what we're doing. We're going to contact the county. I'm still not sure what the ask is.
I think the ask is I have administration check with Paul Fleischner. I think is the best one to go to see what the availability is for shelters for the homeless people.
What I want as soon as possible is an understanding of where we have gaps and people are sleeping outside.
That sounds like a good idea.
Yeah. I mean, so do they do it at zero? I mean,
we're not acting on that. We're just getting research.
Yeah.
Right.
That, but you know, I just, if there's consensus, we know it gets done.
If staff has time to pursue that.
The only other thing I'd ask council to do, I did not put in a council-initiated action. We talked about it last week. Councilman Ruska wasn't present, but we talked about it during the COW. The reciprocating license agreement for massages are in there. Just if you haven't looked at it yet, it's in there, and it's going to be initiated.
City Attorney came up with some language. It's in the consent on the consent agenda.
Second reading. Second reading. Next reading.
And one
first reading.
25 days.
Oh, hi.
2 weeks.
Yeah. All right. All right. I can what? Oh, yeah?